Okay, we are returning from executive session at 7:33. Okay, the next item on our council action items is a personnel contract. So, Mr. City Manager.
Evening, council. Tonight I'm going to request that the council authorize me to do some final tweaks to an employment contract with our police chief that will finalize the remainder of his service to us, which is planning to retire October 31st of 2017. This contract provides the employment context for which he's going to be working in and helps us with succession planning. As you recall, all managers and department directors have employment contracts, including myself, our department directors here. This contract with the chief is very similar to that. The difference is primarily that he's going to be retiring and that this has an end game, an end date. All the other sections and parts of it are almost identical. So I would ask the council to authorize me to finalize the contract and approve it, and then present it to the chief for his signature. And I would ask the council to authorize me to do that. Chief, do you have any comments? Or
not yet.
Not yet. Well, I have a few comments, so we're going to have more comments. First off, I think in my mind this is certainly in a very important position. And our chief has been here for many, many years, has done a stellar job for us. So we take this very seriously. We spent a lot of time working on it. We want to make sure that his service is recognized. So between now and the end of October, we'll certainly want to have recognition, certainly a ceremony of service. Mike has been here 40-plus years. And we've tried to figure out what to do with a 40-year employee, regardless of the retirement status. And the policy doesn't go that far. I think it ends like at 35 years, and so we've been scratching our heads. So it's going to be really an important thing for us to do in terms of celebrating your service, Mike. So I'd ask the council to approve the contract and allow me to move forward with it.
Anyone care to make a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, motion has been made and seconded. Are there any further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay.
Thank you.
Motion is carried 7-0. Okay, that's the end of our action items. We're on to department reports. First one is Public Works, and we're getting a project update.
To the city manager, we are removing the real estate contract from the agenda.
Yes.
You know, we always joke in our department head meetings when it's going to be a Raven show or a Michael show or a Mike show. I think you got a Raven show tonight. Lots of stuff going on in Public Works, and wanted to share some of that with you. First, I wanted to thank you for your leadership in authorizing us to make a really pivotal change in how we maintain our cemetery. You authorized us moving forward, buying equipment, hiring an internal staff member that would be strictly dedicated to that. And I just wanted to play you, it's 30 seconds.
7, 8:17 at 2:29 p.m. Hi, Raven. I happen to be up at Lane Cemetery, or what's called up there on the top of 8th Street Hill. I just love that cemetery. It's so pretty, and I love the history. And I happen to notice you guys are doing a lot of cleanup, and I just wanted to, you know, I guess, compliment you on the work that's being done up there. I did talk to a gentleman that was driving through and told him that I just appreciated all the effort that's being put in right now. It's looking really good, and I can't wait on the progress to see how it's going to come about. So Anyways, wanted to just say I appreciate all the hard work. Thank you. Have a great day.
So, really, I did not pay her to leave me that voicemail.
I swear, does that cost?
Up and down. No, as you might expect, we don't get a lot of those calls. So, I just wanted to thank you, and I think it is paying off, and I think it will continue to. And just what a load off of my back not to continue to have to manage by complaint. We do have other staff changes going on in Public Works. It's kind of the maintenance worker domino show at the moment. So people, as vacancies have opened, have indicated interest in other vacancies in their primary and lateral positions. And since they're in unionized positions, we move forward. And so it's been kind of a bumpy road, and we're still working through it. But I'll continue to keep you apprised is all I can say for right now. We're happy to have our full complement of summer help and move forward there. Lincoln Park Sewer Project, relatively complete. Michael Jones will be talking to you a little bit about that, and it'll be based on your decision kind of which way we go with the paving, so I won't speak a whole lot more to that. I do have, however, and I noticed some of you looking at, so I think mine has yellow and yours is strictly black and white, or black and red. So as a result of our value engineering analysis, where we hope to save anywhere between $100,000 to maybe as much as $500,000 in street improvements, we also identified a section of AC asbestos concrete waterline that is under the section of Sweet Road that we plan on rebuilding here this summer. It's really not best management practices to leave asbestos concrete under a new road segment. It's the one of the oldest type of pipes. It's the most fragile. And this is part of our acquisition of the Sweetwater Road Water Association. So in any event, we're coming to you with a capital improvement plan amendment that does two things. On one side, it says for water, utility, and what we're proposing at this point would be to transfer up to as much as $500,000 from our capital reserves to replace this water pipe. So that's kind of a burn. On the other side of the page is a CIP amendment that talks about the Sweet Road resurfacing and sidewalk improvements. Back when we came to you with the CIP last November, we notified you that we had acquired a $500,000 grant to do the same, but we hadn't yet contracted for it, and therefore it was not in the budget. So we are going forward with that. It's actually out to bid, and we want to make sure before the bids close that you are fully aware that, A, we're doing Sweet Road, which we're doing it first, and largely not because it's needed the most, but because that's the based on the type of money that there is there, which is state. We don't need to federalize it to make it happen. If we federalize it, it goes through another hoop of permits. So our thought was get the Sweet Road piece done. It's actually a very different road section than the rest of Hughes will be. Because we're putting the sidewalk on the back of the ditch, we're really not changing the road. But we have a water main under there. So this is really, I'm not asking for a formal approval. We'll be coming back to you with a budget amendment. But since we don't know the actual cost right now, we know it'll be up to and around that number. We wanted to make sure that you were in the loop, and if there was any change in direction, that I knew about it before the bids open. So that was the main reason for that. AWC conference is next week, and I will be attending, not in my committee hat on, which will be nice. I'll actually be able to benefit from all the educational sessions. What I would ask is you, if you're not planning on going, and as of this morning, there was only one Blaine person going, so I think that's me. But if you're not planning on going, please take a few minutes to look at the educational sessions. And if there's something specific that you have an interest in that you'd like me to check out right now, and I'm pretty open as to what I might participate in. meeting. Let's see, Vista Terrace Electrical's kind of been on hold until the transformers came in. My understanding is those came in this week, so I anticipate they should be getting pretty busy there again, and that should go really quick, and the actual tie-over could yet be this month. So that's exciting. And there was a rail conference last month that none of us were able to go to, but Mr. Beck apparently went and kind of clued me into a presentation that was made by our council member to the north. And they are apparently looking at proceeding with this realignment study in White Rock. So I just wanted to let you know that that is something that's pretty integral for a future passenger rail stop in Blaine, if it were ever to happen. That realignment is largely what would gain some time in the circuit. But from what I'm hearing, and again, I was not there, no one really said yes, and a station in Blaine should follow that. So you want to put on your official hat and maybe communicate over there. I think that would be great. You know who I'm talking about. I want to say Clark, but it's not Clark.
Grant Myers.
Thank you. Myers. So White Rock is proceeding with that study. And last but not least, officially published twice in a national magazine. That never happened before, so I'm proud. Online, if you want to read it, there's two articles. One is my experience traveling to a huge conference in a wheelchair last year, and the second article is on quality-based selection, which is what we're actually required to do when we're selecting architects and engineers in Washington State. And this is the APWA reporter. And Ms. Stewart and I were invited to write an article for the August edition, which, just based on our experience traveling together, a public works director and city council member. I am not registered yet, but my flight is booked. I don't know how smart that was, but I am going again this year to the national conference. This time it's in Orlando, and it'll be the last time that I travel for APWA. So that offer's open if one of you wants to go to Orlando, and there's adequate funding. The only cost to take a council member is travel. They waive the conference registration. Thank you.
Okay, next item is public safety. Chief Haslip, staffing and projects update.
Thank you, Council. Just a couple of quick ongoing notes. We have, between sick leave, vacation, and light duty, we've got 5 people sidelined this week, so we're short-staffed, but running hard to keep up. And another reminder about upcoming auxiliary communication service events. Our ACS team has this room booked for this coming Saturday. They'll be here all day long for a training seminar that last I heard, they had 77 attendees from Oregon, Washington, and British Columbia coming to this thing. Yeah, apparently it's the room limit, Councillor Olson, so we or the number of chairs we had available, one or the two. So they're really busy working on that. Next Saturday is the annual nationwide field day. It's their opportunity to train and practice off-the-grid communications with generators and portable antennas and whatnot, and their intention is to do it at the G Street Peace Portal Parklet Park-In to also have it be in kind of an open house event, a chance for folks who are, have the opportunity to come by and see what it is they do and what it is they do with it, and maybe get a couple more people interested in the program. And of course, we have July 4th coming up. Hands Across Border was a good event. The Customs and Border Protection folks at the ports of entry had their Explorer group. They're teenage folks in training who handle traffic control on the I-5 northbound. As we no longer closed down the freeway for the event, It's become much more problematic to do that. And the attendees, I think they were, I would guesstimate perhaps 2,000. They had this past Sunday afternoon. The weather was beautiful. The sheriff's office came out and provided an extra extra hand. North Watkins Fire had a crew on scene, so that was a good event. I think Chief Hollinger mentioned the traffic crash on 543 northbound Friday afternoon. That traffic tied up for a few hours, started just about 3:30, and North Watkins State Patrol, the first people on scene actually were folks from the border crossing, Customs and Border Protection, uniformed personnel who just happened to be going by at the time of the crash. And so they were on scene. It was a complex event, but it was well handled. And we hope the drivers are going to be okay. There was a letter to the editor last week about the use of a reinforced, we call it a LAV, a light armored vehicle, executing a search warrant in town at a residence. Just wanted to let you folks know that the investigation regarding the offenses that were under investigation continues. There are three separate felony matters being involved. Anytime we do a search warrant of that nature, it's a standardized protocol that we go through in terms of risk assessment and pointing up, going through all the factors that are known to cause problems and how best to execute the search warrant for the safety of the people inside, the neighbors, and the officers. It factors in things like the environment, the past history of the location, the past history of the people involved, and their metrics. And this particular incident pointed up into that medium range where if you have the assets available, it would be prudent to use the resources. This particular, my sense was that the nature of the letter to the editor was also in regards to militarization of civilian law enforcement in the country. And that's a topic of a lot of consternation by a lot of folks. And while we're sensitive to that, we're also sensitive to the need to keep people safe. You know, fire trucks go to fire scenes. You have boom trucks that go to electric calls. And if you have equipment available in terms of protecting your public safety personnel, you should have a reason to not be using it as opposed to using it, having it available on scene. So in this particular case, it was a vehicle that belongs to the sheriff's office, but we have one that's quite similar to it. And the vehicle came with the personnel who were helping us at the scene of that event. We were very glad for their assistance. It was a three-agency response, and we would not do anything differently next time because that's the way the metrics on this particular one pointed up. So, any questions I can answer for you?
Questions?
Right. Thank you,
Chief. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Jones, you're up for Community Development Services.
Last but not least, right?
Well, the city manager's last.
Oh, well, then certainly last but not least. Well, walked right into that one. The capital improvement plan that you have in front of you, that's sort of like the old newspaper, black and white and red all over. That's mine. Ravens is the one with the yellow highlighting. Similar situation here. We have an opportunity with the project to do something that we hadn't originally anticipated in the CIP last year that was approved with the budget. This is basically for paving a trail through Lincoln Park. The Motts Hill Parkway corridor, which will be developed much like the Semyonla Parkway corridor, has two lanes of traffic with shoulders, roadside ditches, and multimodal trail, bike pedestrian trail on the side. And the very first section of that is right up against Lincoln Park. So when the when council approved the project for Mountain Estates, which is the subdivision there, we did not include building a sidewalk on their side of the street because the road section doesn't include sidewalks. It includes a multimodal trail. But we, you conditioned them to contribute their portion of the funding for the multimodal trail, what they would have spent on installing a sidewalk. So that payment has come in, and we put it into the parks fund because the trail will be in the park at that point. And we also have, as you know, the AT&T vault that was discovered without an easement in the park, which now has been paid for at a cost of about $8,000. The combination of those two things is a little over $21,000. And we have a paving crew coming into the park because they're paving the parking lots that are at both ends of this trail corridor. And they've also done a whole bunch of work on the trail to basically rehabilitate it because they did so much excavation work and so much equipment moving in and out of there that the trail got very heavily disturbed. So essentially, it's all prepped for pavement, and a paving crew is coming, and it's planned in the Lincoln Park plan to be paved, and it's the primary corridor from East Blaine into the city. It would be a mistake not to do it right now. There's money in the parks reserve account from Park Impact Fee. There's plenty of money to cover the city's contribution. The developer contribution and the AT&T dollars are all going towards that. And essentially, it allows us to pave the whole trail corridor from the eastern side of Lincoln Park. It'll come down alongside what is kind of D Street at that point. It dips into the park and then connects to E Street. We're also lighting that segment where it passes through the park for that same reason, that it's the primary corridor. So if people are walking down Motts Hill Parkway or riding their bike down Motts Hill Parkway in the future, they're going to be in an area where there's streetlights. But then there's about a, what did you say, it's about 600 feet or so, Raven, a section through the park where it'll be dark, and that's not a good idea. So we installed lighting, or we installed infrastructure for lighting in the ground there. It doesn't have the wires that have been pulled yet, but while the ditches were open, we had them lay conduit. And now we're proposing with this amendment to pave that. So you'll see Lincoln Park was already on this capital improvement plan, but we hadn't planned to pave at that point. It was basically just sort of vegetation management. This will be more than just vegetation management. It's hardscaping, lighting, and creating more of a lawn area on the north side. So it's still in the CIP, but it requires a chunk of additional money.
Michael, would that path, where is that with respect to the sewer line itself?
In respect to the sewer line itself, sometimes it's right on top of the sewer line, right on top of the sewer line, and then sometimes the sewer line is off to the side, because the sewer line goes straight as you can make it. It has to turn at manholes, whereas the trail kind of curves more. So it's very close, but it's not always right on top of it. And if you haven't been up to Lincoln Park lately, I encourage you to take a look. Coming in from the E Street side is actually a really good way to do it, because it's a little messy on the other side still because of a lot of traffic. But it's the trail is in great shape, and things are coming along. There's no parking yet. Yeah, so you have to kind of park on the street. And it's not all seeded yet either. And we're going to be going in under this planned Lincoln Park landscaping effort and taking down some trees there between the main trail in the forest and the trail that's out on the parkway and opening that up where there's more, it's going to be like lawn with trees rather than just a dense forest, so you can really sense that it's a developed park site on the north side. Mr. Lawrence, it looked like you had a question.
Yeah, I had a question, and I was up there looking at it the other day. On D Street, where the stop sign is that comes around, on the south side of the road, there used to be kind of an unofficial road that kind of also connected there, for utilities or whatever. Is that going to be eliminated so we don't have that there in this new plan?
That little road is no longer connects through, but it's needed to access that Homeland Security tower that's there. There's a camera tower there.
Yeah.
So the little driveway will still be there, but it won't connect. It used to be like a loop through. You could mm-hmm. like a long drive through lane. So that's gone, but there's still a little driveway there.
Okay, that'll be better.
Michael, the Motts Hill Parkway, it starts at the Bridges Platte, right?
Well, it actually kind of starts right at that stop sign that Mr. Lawrenson was talking about, where there's the, you know, if you're coming from the east, there's that stop sign that's kind of around the corner at 16th Street.
Right.
And I think in the long run, maybe a roundabout goes there. I'm not totally sure, but that's essentially where it starts.
So will the name change at that point?
I don't know. That's a great question. And we've never actually named Mott's Hill Parkway. It happens on the face of a plat.
I know.
It kind of came into existence before my time. I'm not a huge fan either, Mr. Hawkins. It's not the most scenic.
I call it the Parkway. That's all I
know. I've started to do that too.
The
Parkway. So, yeah, I don't know exactly where it starts because it's never been named on the face of a plat. Mm-hmm. And that's probably an action council should consider, you know, is it Borderview Heights? Is it, you know, something else that relates to Blaine history?
Does that follow Jerome then up to Maple Ridge?
It goes up D Street, and really what happens there by that stop sign is D sort of jogs south, and I call it D and a half, because it's not really on the D Street alignment anymore.
Right.
So it follows D and a half, and then it goes to E Street, and then Jerome is the north-south road. So at Jerome, it enters East Maple Ridge and keeps going straight where it connects to Harvey Road.
And then
at Harvey Road, where it connects, is where our water tower is.
Right.
So that's where the road would go right through the city property, past the water tower, and continue.
Right. That's what I thought.
So it kind of weaves a little bit.
Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, what we're going to be doing is coming forward with a budget amendment. And we want to inform you that we were working on this. The time is right. The crews are showing up. So we're going to go ahead and pave, but there'll be a budget amendment in the next, probably the next council meeting or the one after that, to reallocate some additional funds. The other item on the agenda is I wanted to give you an update on enforcement. In particular, two items. One is that the building official posted 665, 633, and 625 Peace Portal Drive. That's the Casa Azul building block that goes up to G Street. We have been working with the owner of Blaine Bouquet, the building in the middle, where she had sent us some preliminary information from her engineer that was contrary to the information from our engineer that indicated that those were separate buildings. And we said, okay, you need to come forward with more information because they didn't really do a full analysis. We said, that's fine, but give us additional information that demonstrates why he has a different opinion than our engineer. And then you'll need to come up with a plan to fix things because there are some problems. They asked for some time. They asked for two additional weeks. We waited for those 2 weeks to go by, and then we sent a letter informally telling them that we will give them two additional weeks. So they asked for two. We gave them four. And when that time expired, we then took action. So there, we have now posted all three of those properties as though they are one building, which is what the engineering report that is most substantial and accurate, in our opinion, indicates. Mr. Hawkins?
The IMS property, you got no response from them?
We've been in consultation with Brad throughout the process with Mr. IMS. We haven't really had formal response from him, but he has been very, I would say, amenable. He agrees with the, I don't want to put words in his mouth, he's been very amenable and understanding of the situation.
So when you say you posted them, what does the post say?
That's a great question. I should have been more clear. The postings, they were posted, they are what's called a notice of order, and it's an order to repair. And if they don't provide an order, or if they don't provide a building permit application fully substantiated with an architect's engineer's information within a period of time, then they will be given a notice to vacate, and then they will be given a notice to demolish.
Okay.
So they have 30 days to provide us with a building permit, and then additional time after that to execute it. Based on the progress to date, I am really hopeful that we get an order or we get a building permit application to repair the building, but I'm not optimistic. Hope and optimism are different. So we will see, but those have been issued. They're posted on the back of the building so as to not make a big public statement. And also, the owners are permitted to remove an order to repair. An order to vacate, they're not legally allowed to remove. So this one was posted on the back. To be courteous, we let them know it was there. And then we expect they may be gone already. But if they get a notice to vacate, that has to go on the front door.
So we figured out what's going to, if we have to do the demolition of this, have we figured out about what's going to happen with the road? Has our engineers talked about the structure of the road when we start tearing these buildings down?
We talked about it, but we don't have engineering details on it at this point. We do have some engineered plans for some things like the cavity that's under the sidewalk. There's like a tunnel sort of under there, and we have some information about what the building may be as far as a retaining wall, but we don't have an engineered plan for building removal.
So is there any kind of a ballpark of any, you know, what it's going to cost? I mean, the city's going to be responsible for creating or keeping the road safe. Is that if we ask for the demolition of these buildings, is it our responsibility to make sure that that road, these portals, safe? Is that our job?
It's our job. Responsibility implies legal responsibility, so I'm not the right person to answer that question. But yes, it's our job to make sure the road stays up, and we'll make every effort to make sure the road stays up. Whether or not that's a financial burden for the property owners because of the condition of their buildings or not, I don't know. And that will be a question that gets answered.
Any involvement with the state, though? Any
probably
assistance
not,
from them?
Probably
since it's
not.
Their road?
Probably not. I think it's still my answer on that.
So if the engineer determined that's all one building, then it has also been determined that to just demolish the Costa Azul building is not possible without detrimentally affecting, and that's not something that would be done?
It's complicated. We gave an order, Tim issued a notice of order for Casa Azul about a month ago to demolish under the information that we had been provided by Ms. Coltier. And she did not follow up with additional information, so we issued a notice to repair that does not rescind the notice to demolish. So the current standing is that there is a notice to demolish Casa Azul, but with a responsibility for repair to maintain the structural integrity of the adjacent buildings. And so it's difficult, it's challenging. One of the big issues for this was in the first engineering report that received from Ms. Coltier, it said that Casa Azul was a separate building, but that they shared structural support. That Mr. Lawrenson laughed a little bit, and that's the trouble with that is how can you be a separate building if you share structural members, structural support columns? And so we said, okay, answer that question for us and provide us with the additional information, which we didn't receive. So in a best case scenario at this point, Casa Azul will be demolished, and while that happens, there will be some structural changes made to the wall that it shares, and all except that piece will be demolished, which will let the flower shop and the IMUS building to the north become structurally sound. They have other issues. It's not just Casa Azul. There are other problems there, but it could be done. We're not sure it's financially the appropriate thing to do, but it's not that's not our call. So they're moving forward under those circumstances, and we will see what happens over the next few weeks. There'll almost without question be an article in the Northern Light on Thursday about this because we issued a press release with that information.
So I'm still really concerned about what it's going to cost to keep Peace Portal up. I mean, if we tearing down buildings, it's going to create a financial burden on us as a city.
Well, if we do get to the point of doing a teardown, I can assure you we won't be tearing the wall off that holds Peace Portal up. I mean, we'll be tearing other pieces of it up, maybe even leaving the basement floor in place. But there will be an engineer involved in how those decisions are made. I don't have all the answers to that because we're not at that point yet. But part of what you're getting at is also the second half, or maybe the third half of what I want to mention. Because the other property I wanted to mention first, before I get to the next item, which is money, is Rocky Mountain Trading. So Mr. Dobie owns three properties. He owns more properties, but he owns three that are under enforcement actions right now. We've been trying to work with him to be flexible with the timelines because of the cost associated with the city stepping in and taking the action, because that money gets tied up in a lien for a long time, potentially, and we're hesitant to do that. Mr. Dobie is under an order to tear down Rocky Mountain Trading, his property on C Street, which is a house, and then to move or tear down a house on Bell Road because he indicated he wants to try and move it. Actually, the house isn't really in all that bad of shape. He wants to move it off the site, which makes sense because it's zoned for like manufacturing or highway commercial. It's not really the right building to be there. The trouble with Rocky Mountain Trading is the structural issues with it. It's unsound to the point that it's really not safe to be in there because the roof is coming down. And like many buildings of its age, it has asbestos in it. And asbestos needs to be abated by law before you can tear down a building. So we're kind of in a little bit of a loop there that's very complicated. It looks like they may have to get permission from Northwest Clean Air to do a partial demolition, which would be like taking the roof off so that then people can get to the asbestos without the possibility of the roof coming down on them. And then that would all be abated from what I understand. I haven't seen the bids, but from what I understand, the asbestos abatement alone may cost $30,000 to $50,000, and so it's a costly demolition. That's probably a big chunk of the whole demolition cost. So, as a result of some pressure from Maddie, Mr. Doby provided us with a letter over the weekend where he says that they hope to be under asbestos contract by June 19th because they're meeting with people this week to finalize some things. And then they will move forward with demolition immediately after they get the asbestos out of there and with the approval of Northwest Clean Air. He's had a lot of time to do this, but I'm hesitant to jump in there and do it for him because of the cost. In August of 2017 is when the first hearing examiner order came down against Mr. Doby. And then in November of 2016, we had another hearing that basically said, well, he didn't do what he said he was going to do, and so now we're asking for more things to happen, like tearing down the building and some things like that. And it basically gave him about 4 months to do that. We're at about the six-month point now, so he's beyond those limits as well. But based on the numbers that I just gave you, what I would say is I would need at a minimum probably about $100,000 to be allocated towards these kinds of expenditures. In order to be able to move forward comfortably. It's my guess that that's not enough money to tear down both of those, the Peace Portal building and the Rocky Mountain Trading building. But in order to be able to move forward, I would need some kind of an allocation like that. Not asking you for that tonight, I'm just letting you know that that may be a budget amendment that we come forward with, because our budget doesn't include really funds for building demolitions. Now again, we get that money back, but not until the property sells, or if the property is of such limited value that we invest as much as it's worth, then we can like force a sale because we essentially own the property at that point. But that wouldn't be the case, I don't think, for either of those properties. The Waterview property over here is worth quite a bit, and the Rocky Mountain Trading property is a very large commercial piece of property. We wouldn't be the primary lender on those properties. So that's the status of both of those. And like I said, you can expect to see a letter or an article in the Northern Light this weekend, or on to Thursday. And I have nothing else that I can say except that we're probably going to need money if property owners don't take action.
When you say a letter in the Northern Light,
I meant an article in the Northern Light.
Article.
Because yeah. We issued a press release, and Stephanie, Donahue, who was here until just a little while ago, has been asking some questions in regard to that, some follow-up questions. So I'm quite sure she's working on an article that will describe all of what's going on with Peace Portal properties, and then also probably mentions the Rocky Mountain Trading property because it's one we get questions about.
That's a good thing to have an article, so it's not a surprise to people when something actually happens.
We've honestly only heard positive things, except why aren't you moving faster?
Because nobody knows how much it's going to cost and the impact on our budget.
Yeah.
Michael, when we say that a hearing examiner instructs you to tear down a building and you fail to do so, and the city tears down the building, and the person who owns the property is alive, would we not take action against him at that point to recover the money? Or do we have to wait until the property is sold?
The money that we invest in the property for the teardown would be a lien. I don't believe we have the ability to go after the person in another way based on our law. However, Mr. Dobie is also at a point now where he's exceeded his timeline, so he has an automatic $10,000 penalty that the hearing examiner already levied on him. And with the failure to act, we could potentially, I'm not entirely sure, I'd have to look at the law, go back to the hearing examiner and ask for additional penalties, because the hearing examiner did substantially reduce his fines at that November hearing from about $75,000 down to $10,000. So we're looking at that idea of, we're not trying to make a lot of money on this, we're trying to get things cleaned up. So, but he does owe us $10,000. That's a pure fine. That's not cost of work or cost of staff time, because that's a separate fee.
Well, you know, I think we should pursue that to find out if we can some way charge him additional funds.
Yeah, we will look into
that. Doing that. But also, I'd like to check and see if the lien is a second resort or it's the only resort.
I think it's the only resort. By law, that's what our rights are to, if we get permission from the hearing examiner to take the action and then lien the property. The person, we'll send the person a bill. We do that first. It's not like we just immediately go to a lien. But we assume that if they didn't do the work, there was a reason for that. So we'll send them a bill. If they don't do that, then we assess a lien, and then interest gets built on it.
But what I'm saying, we send him a bill, and he doesn't pay the bill. Do we not go to court and say, hey, he owes us X number of dollars, and then the court says, hey, you got to pay it, and he doesn't pay it, then, you know, what actions does the court take against it?
That's what lien the property.
The lien. That's what
the lien is for.
Even the penalties probably end up being a lien on the property.
If he doesn't pay it, I'm not entirely sure. That's very likely, but we may also, it could turn into a criminal penalty, failure to pay your fines. I haven't done this.
You know, it's too bad people don't realize when they have a property that they have an obligation, responsibility to keep it up in repair or otherwise, you know, tear it down or whatever needs to be done. And I don't know.
On the plus side, some of them are learning. We have had some people that have had, like, for example, last year they had vegetation issues, and this year when they got a notice from Maddie that, hey, your grass is 18 inches tall, it got mowed because they don't want to go there again.
Mm-hmm.
So it is starting to definitely have an effect. But you're right, there are some property owners that they don't feel, they don't have a very high level of responsibility.
No.
I guess the thing too, Michael, we would want to explore is, what is our liability with these buildings being in a position where they should be torn down, have to be torn down? What would happen if some kid walked into Rocky Mountain and had the roof fall in there?
Well, that's why we need to take action. Yeah.
Or if somebody goes into Azul, the Mexican old restaurant, falls out the back door.
I could imagine a scenario where someone, a court, whether that's a jury or a judge, could find the city in some way liable. I could imagine a scenario like that. I wouldn't want to speak to that.
No. But I mean, that potential, I'm sure, exists. We know that the buildings are not safe, and we have to take action at some point knowing that.
That's why we're taking action.
Yep.
That's one of the reasons why. Yeah. So anyway, those are the status of those two buildings. And then, as I say, it looks like the way things are going, we will probably come before you with the budget amendment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. City Manager.
Also, I just have a few things to report. We had some correspondence regarding the signs at the pavilion. We've already been moving forward with new signage, and so that's in progress. We're going to talk with the senior program. Dennis, you and I can talk about this maybe a little bit later. We'd like for them to participate potentially in a new LED sign, the one that's across from the high school. We'd like to have it replaced. We're going to put a new driveway into that part of the parking lot, and it might be nice to be able to install a new lit sign at the in that area. We work with planning on the permits for it, but I think the senior program has been generally pretty generous And maybe that might be something they might be interested in helping us with. Also,
we'll be around with a handout.
I can't hear you.
I say we'll be around with a handout.
Yeah, we'll go talk to the board. Also, in the pavilion, if you've been there at any kind of event, you realize it's incredibly loud. So we've got acoustical work occurring very soon. Same kind of acoustics you see in this room, panels on the ceiling. And hopefully that will knock down some of that noise that's in there. We'll just, I think, have to keep working at it until we're satisfied that either we've done as much as we can or the problems are resolved. But it's just a matter of just too much reflection of sound. So we're working on that. As you know, the Revenue Task Force met in May. It completed the work. We reported that to the Economic Development Committee last week. It comes to the council in a final report at your next meeting. So we'll go through all that process and let you know the outcomes. There is an article, a press release that we're finishing up that will speak to that, that will go in the paper, I think, this week. So you should be aware that's going to go out and just reports the recommendation. We have been working with the new chamber management. I don't know if you know that. There's a new board. Every year they elect new board members and have a new president and vice president. So we've been trying to actively work with the new president on some activities. I think I mentioned to all of you that we've gone ahead and let the sales agreement or the sales contract with Craig and Eugene expire. And I've interviewed Mike Kent and Saratoga to replace that contract for selling the Gateway property. You know, we interviewed them last year. I went to John Sitkin and asked if we could use the request for proposal again rather than going out, and he said it was perfectly acceptable. So we interviewed those two firms. We're going to probably move forward with Mike Kent. I think he did a really terrific job of representing what he could do with his partner as well. So we'll be working through that. You'll see a contract at the next council meeting to finish that part of the job.
Who's Mike's partner?
Jeff Johnson. Oh. They're both at Windermere.
Yeah.
Jeff's part of the commercial division.
Oh, okay.
We had some conversations last week about Exit 274 and East Plain infrastructure. We're not pessimistic. We're not overly optimistic. I think there is possibility of continuing that utility up the road or up the hill. Obviously, our goal is to keep it moving as far east as possible. The biggest next project is going to be hopefully infrastructure for East Maple Bridge. I mean, that would be wonderful to get it that far. But our goal is to get it as far as possible. So we're working on trying to develop strategies around that. We've also been working with the lobbyists to help us work on how to get the connection back with Exit 274. And we should hear back that strategy would be for the governor himself to propose Exit 274 as part of his budget. So we'll be reporting more about that to you in the next month or so. And then last but not least, we'll continue with real estate. The GSA building that was proposed, if you recall, that was going to be a building that consolidates all of the various parties. The last that we'd heard from that is the council wanted more information from the broker about how the building was going to be used. They had a very deep discount on their asking price. We haven't heard anything back from them. I followed up today with Craig, and there's not been any action. So we'll see where that goes. That's a very long, long, long lead. We did and are continuing to move forward with the Cheesecake Company, Tuckanut Bay Cheese, are moving forward. We're doing the platting and all that work. And we've talked a bit about Yorkston's offer. We're going to follow up with that tomorrow. And then Michael and I, been about 2 or 3 weeks ago, we met with a guy that makes dog food products, dog biscuits, and he wants to relocate his factory from Canada to the U.S. And we didn't think it really had any legs, but he emailed us today and wants about 1 acre. So that's kind of an interesting idea. So there's things happening. We're continuing to work the project, and hopefully we'll keep moving forward with getting it developed as you wish.
What about the logistics place over off of Boblett? Anything come of that?
I have not heard anything of that. We need to follow up with that, maybe. Okay. Yes, sir.
it's been so long ago since I asked the question. How is the gentleman we hired to do the study? What's his name?
Oh, Beckwith? He's actually, I've been in contact with him. Now that we've finished the financial thing with the revenue task force, he's going to submit the final survey form to us by the end of the month. We'll do that survey over the month of July, early August, and we'll have that report all completed for you for your budget process in the fall.
Okay, so he's still actively working
on it? Oh, yeah. We put it on hold until we had that question about the city's budget done first. It was just out of order without that work done by the revenue task force.
Okay, and I guess the other one I had was, have we been communicating with the library group that are working over in Birch Bay, or do we know where that sits? Or
well, maybe Dennis might be able to report that tonight. He's your liaison with the library.
What's happening with the library?
They purchased the property, the Whatcom County Library Board, and they are now the owners of the vote property. But there's some stipulations that they got to retain the house that's there. And they got to have some money, I guess. There was a question asked at the end of this line, does the Birch Bay have to pay for the library itself and reimburse the county? And really didn't get a very good answer. There was a member of the library board at the last library, Friends of the Library meeting.
So they're saying that the Birch Bay needs to build a building.
Well, they've got to retain what they got, and then whatever they need in terms of space, yeah, they'd have to construct something.
It wouldn't be the Birch Bay, but they don't have a tax source. It would have to be a county.
No. Mm-hmm. It would be Friends of the Library.
Oh, Friends of the Library.
I can't.
Wow.
Do we own this building, don't we?
Yes, the city building.
Yeah, it's a city building, so I assume that the county would have to build the building.
Well, it wouldn't be the county. It's the county library system. Whatcom County Library System is a distinct district.
And they don't build buildings.
That's not us? It doesn't include us?
I'm misunderstanding your question.
Are we in that district?
Yes.
Then why do we own the building?
This may be the only building, at least in the communities, that the library system is. Let me step back. For the most part, the library system doesn't own buildings in communities. Those are owned by the local community, and the local community like ours pays for certain elements of that. And the library district pays for the staffing, the books, the operations. I don't think we pay utilities on the building. Yeah. So that's the model. So having them go to Birch Bay is a very unique situation, which I don't have full knowledge about the reimbursement plan. I do believe that they're going to be required to, at a minimum, fund the construction of any improvements to the building or any improvements on the site. I think you could make an argument that they should also reimburse the county for the cost of the land. Otherwise, it's unfair to all the other communities that have had to pay for their own properties and buildings. So for parity purposes, you could go back and do that. My sense, Dennis, you can respond to this, is that there was a sense that that property had such great value that they wanted to move forward with it. You know, I don't have the details of those decisions. I think if they're going to spend nearly $1 million, you could buy a pretty nice piece of land that's flat, that's completely buildable up on the plateau. But they made the decision to do that deal. The Birch Bay community is also working toward trying to build their park on Marine Drive, which is another big public initiative, because the county bought the land, but they're not planning to build the park. So I would imagine on the table that there's probably $3 to $5 or more million that community has to raise to build their facilities, which is a big nut to crack for fundraising.
So the county doesn't own any libraries.
I don't think so.
There's maybe one. But generally it's they provide the books and the staff.
And operations.
And there was quite a discussion, how did you get involved with buying that land then? they decided to do it, that was the Whatcom Library Board.
Yeah.
So there it sits.
I still believe that the library for Blaine is a very important part of our economic engine. Many, many people come to Blaine to go to the library. And all of those Birch Bay folks that we think is about 8,000 in that system, you know, come here if they're part of the library system in North County. So I consider that a very important project for us to keep our eye on. As long as it's here, we should continue to support it and do what we can to enhance it so our customers come to Blaine.
Dave, so I can go talk to Debbie again. Did you ever hear anything back about the free building in Seattle?
No.
Okay.
Anything else? All right, thank you.
Okay, next item on the agenda is council reports. Bonnie, how about your two?
Okay, just a couple things with the chamber. On the 17th of June, they're having a dog festival at the Peace Arch Park, which is a fundraiser for the Puppy Rescue Mission. I think that's that operation on H Street next to the Peace Arch City Cafe. She runs a thrift shop, which the proceeds benefit this rescue ranch, she calls it. Well, this says mission, so maybe it is a different organization. Maybe I'm speaking out of turn, but anyway, this is a dog festival to benefit puppy rescue. And then also the 4th of July parade is coming up, and if you're going to be in the parade, you need to fill out an entry form, which are available at the chamber office. And there's some entry fees this year as well. And that's all in the chamber. And I will probably have a report next time on the Boys and Girls Club about their summer program.
Paul, WTA. Hey, Charlie.
No report.
Dennis, you're too.
I was on vacation last week, but I did talk to Debbie. I was at the Peace Health Hilton.
That's my vacation.
Senior Center had an election of the new board members, and they are holding their annual meeting today. And Saturday is the breakfast. And as far as the library, Debbie gave me a booklet. And it has everything in it.
Okay. Small Cities Caucus, we have one this month coming up, not this next week, but the week after. And the Watson Council of Governments, they're having a meeting this Wednesday. So no reports on those yet. And any changes to the calendars? Okay. Any unfinished?
Any council new business? If there's none, I will adjourn the meeting at 8:31.